I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Magda Havas from Canada, and we're going to talk about electromagnetic fields and dirty energy and the things that come about from those things. How are you, Dr. Havas?
I'm well, thank you, Eva.
Thanks for coming on tonight. Your topic is one of my favorite things, but it's one that I understand it, but I don't know all of the science in my head, so you're going to have to help me get this across.
My pleasure.
First of all, I want you to tell us, what is dirty electricity? What is that? How is it different from the electricity that we knew back in the 50s?
Well, clean electricity is something that the utility wants us to use because it's the safest for any kind of electronic equipment or electrical equipment. And what clean electricity is an alternating current at 60 cycles per second. That's how quickly it oscillates. So clean electricity is a 60 hertz sine wave, or a nice smooth wave that goes up and down, doesn't have any bumps in it. Dirty electricity is something that's produced by a lot of the electronic equipment that we currently use, computers, for example, and it puts spikes on the line, so you have a choppy wave instead of a nice smooth wave.
Okay.
We know that this form of energy is harmful to sensitive electronic equipment, and one of the things we're beginning to recognize is also harmful to humans.
You know, something I didn't do when I got you on, normally I give people an intro and let them tell about themselves, and for some reason I didn't do that tonight. So why don't you take a second and tell who you are and where you are and people can find you.
Okay, well...
And a little bit about your background.
Sure. I'm an associate professor at Trent University, which is a small liberal arts university in a community called Peterborough, Ontario. So we're about a two-hour drive from Toronto, for those of you who know where Toronto is. And my primary area of interest for research is environmental contaminants. I started my degree at the University of Toronto, both as a Bachelor of Science student and then as a doctoral candidate. And then I spent a couple of years at Cornell University, where I continued doing research on aluminum toxicity and acid rain research. That was my first love. And I became interested in air quality, drinking water quality, food contaminants. And then in the early 1990s, I became intrigued by the research I was hearing about dealing with electromagnetic pollution, and began to look at it a little bit more carefully, and became fascinated and actually changed the area of research that I do right now.
What was the area of interest about acid? What did you say that was?
Acid rain.
Acid rain. Okay, I missed that word. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how are your peers in your field accepting what you're doing?
Well, a lot of them, when they realized I was switching from one type of chemical contaminant to a radiation contaminant, they tried to discourage me. They didn't think it was a very smart move, but I think that the best science you do is when you're really fascinated and passionate about something, and when you don't have answers to questions. And I think when you have an inquiring mind and you're curious and you begin to explore things, that's when it becomes fun from a scientific perspective, and that's when you can make contributions scientifically as well.
That's exactly what I was thinking about, more or less, the contribution. Cell phone companies, computer chip companies, they're not going to like this research. So are they listening?
Well, they're probably listening and trying to figure out how to counter some of the arguments that other scientists are coming up with, as well as myself. We're finding that this form of energy is harmful. There are all sorts of different health effects that have been associated with exposure to this energy, and the utility doesn't like it, the cell phone industry doesn't like it. But, if that's what we're finding, that's what we're finding.
I really found the work that you, there were two things that really fascinated me. The diabetes work that you found, and the ringing in the ear thing, or the noise in the ear thing, because that happens to me all the time, and I'll tell you something about that as we get along. But so tell the listeners about the diabetes and the connection with dirty electricity.
Okay, well, maybe I could
just hypersensitivity.
Back up a little bit. Yeah, I'll back up to hypersensitivity, if that's okay. A few years ago, I did a study in Ontario where we were measuring electric and magnetic fields in a total of 60 different communities to find out what people were exposed to. And that
now, how are you doing this measurement? Because I know people don't tend to believe things, so tell them a little bit of the science so they'll believe you.
Well, there's all sorts of meters that you can buy that measure different aspects of the electromagnetic spectrum, either different frequencies, or they measure the electric field, or they measure the magnetic field, or they measure the radiation that's being emitted by something. So the technology exists to measure these different frequencies.
Okay.
And so we went around meter in hand, jotting down values in the main streets in some large cities in Ontario, just to get a sense of what people were actually exposed to. There's been quite a bit of work on this that the EPA has done, Environmental Protection Agency, where they document different appliances in your home, what they emit, what comes from power lines, that type of thing. So we were just trying to figure out, what are people, in the downtown, in the center of a city, exposed to when they're walking around, for example? And we published that research, and we were interviewed, by the newspapers. And a woman in Toronto read the article and contacted me a few days later. And she told me a very interesting story. And that story was that she had a daughter, a teenage daughter, who had just started going to a new school. And her daughter was electrically sensitive. And whenever anyone tells me they're electrically sensitive, I ask them what their symptoms are and how do they know it's electrical sensitivity as opposed to something else. And basically the way she addressed that, it did seem to be that she was legitimately electrically sensitive. And she was telling me that her daughter had just started going to this new school and was ill when she went to the school. She got extremely tired and would have to come home at lunchtime and spend the afternoon sleeping. And the mother was quite distressed about this, and she told me that she had purchased filters that you could put into your home that cleaned up the dirty electricity, and it really helped her daughter. And she got permission from the school principal to put these filters in the school environment so that her daughter could actually, survive. And was given permission to do that. And she said, the reason I'm calling you is I'd like you to do a study on these filters to see who else in the school might be benefiting or not if we put them into the school. And at that time, my understanding of these filters was nil. I didn't know what they did. I didn't know what they were. And I actually didn't believe that what she was telling me was real, that someone could plug an appliance into the wall and that would purify the electricity, and then people would start feeling better. I just didn't think that was possible. And
I have a question here.
Yep.
And I know it should come down the line, but I don't want to forget it. Do you have to put this thing in every plug, one plug, the main place coming into the house, or does it matter?
No, you don't have to put it into every plug. You basically put it where you have appliances that generate the dirty power. So if you have computers, you would put some by your computer or your television set, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a meter that you can buy as well that's fairly inexpensive, and you can see the change instantly. So it measures the dirty power, and then you can see how much the dirty power has decreased. It doesn't eliminate it, but it does reduce it quite a bit.
So you'd have to put one in. And every is it something you plug in or just put it in the room?
You plug it in. You plug it into an electrical outlet. And basically what it is, it's a capacitor that's tuned to a certain frequency range, and it shorts out anything that comes across the wire that's within that frequency
range. Oh, that's very interesting. How much do these things cost?
Gosh, I don't know what the prices are in the United States. I think they're maybe about $35. I think.
Oh, so something cheap.
Oh, it's very inexpensive, yeah.
I thought it was going to be like $1,500. Okay.
No,
I'm sorry to distract from your story. But
no, that's fine. They're quite inexpensive, but you need more than one. You need at least one per circuit that you have in your house, and sometimes two. So you might have eight circuits, or, you know, depending on the type of house you have. But
okay.
So she contacted me and asked me if I would do a study. And normally, I wouldn't necessarily get involved in something like this, but she was so sincere and so passionate and just wanted to help her daughter. And I thought, well, even if we do a study and find out that these filters don't have any biological effect at all, that's, from a scientific perspective, that's useful information. And
mm-hmm.
so I agreed to do the study. We did it blind, so we designed it so that none of the teachers knew what we were doing, you know, when we were putting the filters in and when they weren't in. So it was a blind study. And I wasn't, you know, we collected a lot of information over a six-week period with and without filters. You know, we moved them around so that they, you know, we took account for seasonal changes as well in the school year. And I wasn't too, excited about putting all the data in the computer and having to analyze it, because I thought at the end, you know, we'd come up and it would show that virtually there's no difference. And when I finally got around to analyzing it, and I found the results, and I couldn't believe what we were finding. So I thought maybe I had made a mistake, and I went back and, you know, checked all my numbers, and they were correct. And basically what we found is that about 45% of the teachers in that school improved when the filters were in this blind study. They had fewer headaches. They had fewer body aches and pains. They had more energy. They felt more cognitively functioning better. You know, they were thinking better. They weren't frustrated with the students. And the interesting thing is the students behaved better during this period as well. And many of their symptoms were the ones that we associate with attention deficit disorder. And so I became quite intrigued. We've since repeated that school study at three other schools, using dummy filters that don't work and the real filters, so it was a true, you know, blind study,
mm-hmm.
and got virtually the same response, that and the younger students in elementary school had the greatest benefit from the filters. The high school students in one school improved slightly, and in the other school showed no effect at all.
What do you suppose that is?
Well, I think it's because they're still using cell phones, and so they're still exposed to radiation that these don't clear up at all. I think that's one of the possible explanations for the difference. Also, we know that young children are much more sensitive to anything in the environment, and so we would expect them to react more strongly to whether it's chemicals or food additives or electromagnetic energy.
Now, I'm sorry.
Now,
this is not... I have a question here I want to ask you. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
Okay. We know that, you know, minerals like magnesium are used to conduct electricity in the body. So I want to know, and we know that the majority of the adults today are severely mineral deficient. So do you think that this type of electricity could burn up the minerals faster, you know, kind of like one of those, you know, those sparklers that kids have that you light and they wave them around?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you light that, it just kind of burns up all that stuff. Do you think that it could do that to our minerals? Or do you think there's some role that minerals play with this dirty electricity and how it affects us?
Well, you're right in that we've got a lot of chemicals in our body that are electromagnetic in nature. That's how our nerves function, through sodium, potassium channels and pumps. And calcium and magnesium are both important in that regard as well, for membrane integrity and things like that. What the research seems to show is that animals that are exposed to this form of energy, they develop heat shock proteins or stress proteins. So it's telling us that the body is under physiological stress. And I think when that happens, we start protecting ourselves. And in the process of doing that, we use up a lot of energy and a lot of the chemicals in our body. We're, you know, consuming them in order to protect the body. And
mm-hmm.
that could potentially lead to a mineral deficiency for some of the minerals in question.
Okay. Now, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just had to ask that question. Go ahead with your story. I'm sorry.
Okay, not a problem. So we did this research. We presented it back to the school. We you know, gave them the results from the studies, and we identified the teachers privately who were sensitive and who should probably avoid exposure as much as possible. And then I met the person who designed the filters. His name's Dave Stetzer, and he lives in Wisconsin. He's an electrical contractor. He deals with power quality problems all the time. And he came to the school and gave a talk, and I met him. And he invited me to visit him in Wisconsin to talk to some of the people that he's been working with. I'm interested in ground current as well, and he does a lot of ground current research. And when I went down...
Tell me what that is now that you brought it up.
Ground current, that's when you have electricity flowing through the ground. It shouldn't be there, but in some parts of North America, the utilities deliberately put it into the ground because they don't have enough capacity on the wires. And it's causing a real problem on farms, for example, with dairy cows. Their milk production goes way down. They become sick. They miscarry. It's a very serious problem in some areas. And we're exposed to it as well. So
I don't understand how they do it. I mean, what the purpose of that is.
Of putting it in the ground?
Yeah. Does it end up going in the wires in our houses? Is that why they do that?
Well, what happens is we get electricity from the utility, and it comes along wires into our house, and then it has to complete the circuit, so it has to go back. And so we have wires that bring it to our house, and then we have wires that take it back, basically. Just like in a battery, you have to connect both ends of the battery in order to get the light to come on. And in some locations where the utility distribution system is now getting quite old, and if they haven't kept up the maintenance properly, and when you have more and more homes using the electricity and more electronic gadgets that we're all using as well, that puts a lot of stress on the return current. And in some cases, the wire that's been there for, 30, 40, 50 years doesn't have the capacity to bring the electrons back to the substation. And when that happens, the electrons actually go into the ground. And the utilities have been, instead of, paying to put another wire in and increase the flow of electrons, they've deliberately put it into the ground to get it back that way. And when they do that, it means that the ground has become another wire. And so as you walk along the ground, you're exposed to that those electrons flowing through it. And that's what's making people sick. So there's this is a whole other area. And I know that you talked a little while ago with James Oshman, and he was saying how wonderful it is when people are walking barefoot on the ground, and that you can actually tether your bed to the ground and get a good night's sleep by bringing in the, the natural, healthy electrons kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true in most places. But if you live in a location where you have ground current, then that has the exact opposite effect. It can actually make you quite ill.
How do you know?
How do you know if you have ground current?
Yeah.
Well, you can take two metal wires. Most people can't do this themselves. You need some equipment. But you can take two metal rods, shove them into the ground, connect them with an electrical cord, put a meter in between them, and you can see the electricity flowing through the ground.
Well,
you can
pick
it up and look at it on a spectrum, a spectroscope, and see what it looks like, whether it's clean or whether it's dirty. It's the dirty electricity that seems to be causing the greatest problem, but clean electricity isn't good either for going through our bodies.
Well, okay. Did you finish that story?
I'm so sorry,
but you have so many things that are interesting.
Well, you were asking about the diabetes. So when I went down and met Dave Stetzer in Wisconsin as we were driving from farm to farm, he told me that some people who are diabetic have better blood sugar levels when their homes are cleaned up. And I became quite excited about this because that's something that is not objective. When you ask someone, or not subjective, when you ask someone whether they have a headache or not and to rank the amount of pain or the degree of fatigue, that's a very subjective response. And so there's quite a bit of potential error in subjective responses. But with blood sugar, there's blood sugar meters that give you a number, and that number should be fairly constant each time you do it. And so I began to do research with people who are diabetic to see if they are indeed electrically sensitive as well and whether or not it affects their blood sugar.
I have one question. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
A if I don't ask you, I'll forget because I'll get caught up in what you're saying. Is this does this also apply to hypoglycemia as well?
I don't know. Right now, the only evidence we have is for hyperglycemia.
Okay.
And what we're finding is that for diabetics who are type 1 diabetics, so their body doesn't produce enough insulin, and they often have to inject themselves with insulin to maintain their proper blood sugar. These people, if they're electrically sensitive, and if you put them into a clean environment, their blood sugar will drop within a matter of about 20 minutes, noticeably.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yep. And if you put them into a dirty environment, or even put them in front of a computer, their blood sugar will increase within about 20 minutes.
I think I read somewhere in one of your papers that one of the things that goes on was that the insulin was inhibited by norepinephrine, which is a stress hormone.
Right.
That would make a lot of sense.
It does. It really does. Well, when diabetics are stressed, whether it's physical stress or emotional stress, they react by, you know, increasing their blood sugar. That's mm-hmm. one of the things that we can see in them. And so with diabetics, there was a diabetic, an 80-year-old type 1 diabetic who had these filters put into her house. And so we got her to send us her blood sugar readings that she took twice a day and the amount of insulin she used. A week before, she had the filters put in, and then a week after, she had the filters put in. And her blood sugar dropped dramatically. I can't remember the exact amount right now, but it dropped from about 170 down to about 119, I think it was. And 120 is considered diabetic for your fasting blood sugar, mm-hmm. fasting plasma glucose in the morning. So her levels, on average, were dropping right down to the level that, you know, we classify people as diabetic. The amount of insulin she required daily dropped from 35 units to 9 units. She would wake up in the morning, measure her blood sugar, and it was normal, so she wouldn't give herself any insulin, obviously, because then she'd go hyperglycemic.
Mm-hmm.
We also worked with a woman who was a type 2 diabetic, and she didn't take any medication. She controlled her blood sugar with diet and exercise. And when I was going through, and she gave me years of blood sugar data that I basically went through, and I found that when she went walking, that's the way she controlled her blood sugar. She would go for a walk, a 20-minute walk. And when she did that, her blood sugar came down to normal within 20 minutes. If she worked out on a treadmill, her blood sugar actually went higher rather than lower, and that's because treadmills generate dirty electricity. So she was under physiological stress, and instead of her blood sugar going down, it actually went up.
Now, how does the earlier I was, for some reason, I had the picture that it was the electricity coming into your house or your office. How does a particular piece of equipment make it be dirty?
Well, with the treadmill, you have something called a variable speed motor.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that has a variable speed motor will put these high frequencies on the wire.
Oh, okay. So like rheostats, too.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you have a dimmer switch, for example, in your home, you know, to
mm-hmm.
control the lighting, as you turn that dimmer switch down, if you have the meter plugged in, you'll get a certain reading. As you turn the dimmer switch down, what is happening is that wave is being chopped. And hence you're getting less light. And every time it's chopped, it puts a spike on the wire. And so what you're doing is producing a very choppy wave, and that's the dirty power.
Does that work the same way in your car, on your radio?
No.
Are you getting dirty electricity there?
No, that's totally different. Most of the research that we've done has been entirely in homes. Although you have alternating current in your car, we haven't ever worked with that, apart from the magnetic field.
Would it be the same kind?
Would it be what? I'm sorry?
The same kind of, would it be dirty?
I've never measured it in the car.
Okay.
So
would
know.
It be logical for it to be dirty?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
But you're not talking about 60 hertz cycle either. You're talking
So that's the difference.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And so we started working with these diabetics and found that, you know, their blood sugar was very responsive to the dirty electricity in their environment. And, you know, if we go into a doctor's office and he's got, or he or she has all of this equipment around there, mm-hmm. if you're electrically sensitive, your blood sugar is going to go higher in that office. And so it'll look as though you have a much more serious case of diabetes than you might actually have.
That's very interesting. Really is.
And when doctors tell you to, you know, exercise and you work out on a treadmill, you're actually causing stress to your body. And that's one of the things that people can do, in, you know, in your listening audience if they're diabetics, is they can measure their blood sugar before they work out on a treadmill and measure their blood sugar after working out, and it should go down. And if it doesn't, and if it goes up,
telling you something.
They're definitely sensitive.
All right, we're halfway through the show. I just want to let you know that so you can kind of gauge your response. I want to talk about the brain tumors, and I want to talk about myelin sheaths, but I want you to tell us about what is diabetes, type 3 diabetes, what is that?
Well, that's what we called diabetes. If you're electrically sensitive or if you're responding to something in the environment, then we classified that as a type 3 diabetes.
Okay.
So we know there's a type 1, a type 2. We know there's brittle diabetes, which is something that, you know, when people have difficulty controlling their blood sugar. And we think that some of the brittle diabetics are actually type 3 diabetics, where they're responding to something in the environment, whether it's radio frequency or dirty electricity or something else. And that's what's been the unknown so far, mm-hmm. you know, so that they haven't been able to control for that.
So I guess if people just pay attention to how they feel in different places, there's a clue there.
Exactly, yeah. The more in tune you are with your body, the better.
And another one more thing quickly. You said somewhere in one of your papers I saw that you said Alzheimer's may be a form of that type 3 diabetes.
Well, that's what has been, that's what other people are saying in the literature. They're classifying
really?
A form of Alzheimer's as a type 3 diabetes.
And form of Alzheimer's, because I thought it had something to do with dopamine.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, and some of the neurotransmitters.
So is it the same as this type of Alzheimer's, or is it a different kind of Alzheimer's that's connected with dopamine? More than one kind?
There's some controversy as to what's causing Alzheimer's, and, you know, there's neural plaques and aluminum and all sorts of things have been implicated in it, so I'm not totally up on the Alzheimer's research, but I do know that they were classifying Alzheimer's as a type 3 diabetes.
Interesting. I had not heard that until I saw it in the paper. Why do they say that before we move on? Why do they say it? What is it about blood sugar levels that's connecting them with Alzheimer's?
I'm not certain. That's not... all I know is that they classify this as a type 3 diabetes.
Okay, I understand. Okay, another thing I wanted to know was people with, like, say, MS, and their myelin sheaths are all deteriorating. Could that be because of these high-pitched frequencies and this erratic, this dirty electricity?
Well, as a matter of fact, we did studies with people with MS as well because we were told anecdotally that they improved when they were in a clean environment. There was a school in Wisconsin that had sick building syndrome. The teachers were really sick. The students were ill all the time. And normally we associate sick building syndrome with either mold or air quality issues. And so after the school board decided to get rid of all the mold, rip out carpets, sterilize things, the teachers came back in September, and they got sick again. So there was still something in the school that was causing them to become ill.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted this guy, Dave Stetzer, and he went in, measured the power quality, said it was dirty, put filters in, and one of the teachers there had multiple sclerosis. She was diagnosed with it, and she was having great difficulty cognitively. She couldn't remember the name of her students in the classroom. And after they put the filters in, she began to improve. And she was very, very skeptical of the filter. She thought, you know, Dave Stetzer was a charlatan who was just trying to make a lot of money. And when her symptoms began to improve and she noticed that she could actually remember the name of her students and, you know, she was feeling better, she wasn't exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
And several other people had the same reaction when they used the filters. Some of them went back and had MRI scans, and the sclerosis of the brain went away. They couldn't find it in the scans after a while. And so I began to work with people with MS. And we would put the filters in. In this case, I didn't do any blind studies. I always used the real filters because I didn't care if their symptoms were psychological or real. I just wanted to find out whether or not they would change at all. I didn't know if they would or not. And almost every person that we worked with, initially began to improve, and I was really amazed, and I would see them before and after, and I kept thinking, I can't believe this is happening. So I began to videotape them. And when I give talks, I show the videos, and when you see the before and after just a few days of exposure to a few weeks of reducing exposure, the results are absolutely phenomenal. People are able to walk, they have more energy, they're able to think clearly, their tremors go away. So it's really a very positive good news story.
That's interesting.
So we think that some people with MS, not everyone, we have worked with people with MS and we went into their homes and we couldn't notice any difference in any of their symptoms. But some subset of the population that is sensitive can benefit if they reduce their exposure.
All right. I want to ask you a question it's kind of a woo-woo question, but because it's something that's out in the public today, I want to know about it. You know, you hear things all the time about their, I don't even know how to say it, about spiritual enlightenment and people's frequencies shifting. I'm just going to tell you this. I interview people all the time, all these spiritually aware scientists and alternative medicine doctors. Every single person, I mean, there's not been one that's been very spiritual aware that hasn't had this thing change in their ears, where they suddenly start hearing this sound. And I was even talking to Urban Lasley, and it's really got, I'm almost obsessed with it because I want to know what it is. I was talking to Urban Laszlo about it one day, and he said, yeah, Eva, it's B-flat. So one thing that I've noticed, I talked to Norm Shealy the other day, and we were talking about this, and he said, well, you know, when this shift in people's frequency happens, and I don't know what the word frequency means when we're talking about spiritual shift, but I know something goes on, and that's the word that's used. When it happens, people get profoundly depleted of magnesium. And so I have this ringing, and it comes in one ear or the other, on and off, and on and off. And the more spiritually evolved that you get, the more this sound comes. So Norm convinced me to try to use magnesium for some other things that I had going on, and I did it. And I noticed that sound is not the same anymore. It's changed. So I wonder if the spiritual thing that's going on in the world, whatever that thing is that people talk about, could it have something to do with these all these high frequencies and these erratic frequencies? Could there be some connection? Does that make any sense?
Well, I'm not familiar with the B flat and
well, it's also the sound that comes from the void and from the black hole that happens to be. I think it's the frequency of silence.
Well, this is new for me. If you were to ask me, or if you were to tell me that you hear a ringing in your ears periodically and it changes, from location to location or from time to time, I would probably want to find out what radio frequencies you're exposed to in your neighborhood. If you are electrically sensitive, that's one of the symptoms. It's a form of tinnitus. Although with tinnitus, you hear it all the time. It's not situational. With electrical sensitivity, it's situational. So it might suddenly appear and then it'll disappear. Or you might only hear it in your bedroom at night and no place else.
Well, I'll tell you a strange thing that happened. The Tibetan monks came to Atlanta not too long ago, and I made dinner for them, and we were all sitting in this room at a table. There weren't many of us, like 7 or 8 of us. And all of a sudden, when that room got quiet and they went into this like meditative state. Mm-hmm. This noise jumped down an octave. It was still the same noise, but it jumped down an octave. It was. I'd never had that happen for me. Anyway, it happens to other people too. I've been talking to them, and it's always people that seem to be on a spiritual path that it happens to. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
maybe their minds are much more quiet and they can hear this, whereas the rest of them have such busy minds.
Maybe so. But it's a loud noise. I mean, you can't help but hear it. You just kind of get used to it. Okay. Another thing I want to talk about are glioblastomas. For some reason, I'm very interested in those things. And I had somebody come on my show one time that was a radiologist at Duke University, and I said, you know, I think that and I don't have the right language here, I think that artificial energy feeds glioblastomas, and I think that it makes them quadruple instead of just double. And he said, I'll tell you a story, Eva. One day, me and another radiologist were in the lab, and he had two petri dishes of glial cells sitting there. And I asked him, what would happen if we put one of those glial cells in an MRI? So we did for 15 minutes. 3 days later, the one in the glial that they put in, the glial cells that they put in the MRI had quadrupled, and the other one had not. So do you think there's some connection between this dirty energy and all of these highly malignant tumors that are going on? Because we're seeing them more in children now than ever.
Most definitely. There have been a number of studies showing that if you expose cancer cells to high magnetic field, either at low frequency or at high frequency, they reproduce much more quickly. Indeed, one of the technologies that's used for treating, for healing with electromagnetic energy is diathermy. And apparently you're not supposed to use that on people who have cancer because it speeds up the rate of cell division and you don't want cancer cells to divide
really
rapidly. Yep.
And what is that called? How do you spell that?
Diathermy.
Uh-huh.
D-I-A-T-H-E-R-M-Y.
Oh, diathermy. Okay. Yep. I don't know that word, but I want to be able to read on it. So how does it do that? Do you know?
Well, I don't think people really understand what the mechanism is. In some cases, the cancer cell will speed up. In other cases, it will slow down. It depends on what is actually happening through the cell cycle, whether there's potential for repair. If there's potential for repair, it'll slow down the rate of growth, that type of thing. So it's very much specific to what the frequencies are, the intensity, and the type of cancer cell that you're dealing with. But the studies that are coming out from Sweden, particularly by Leonard Hardell, are showing that people who use cell phones for greater than 10 years have an increased risk of developing astrocytoma, for example, on the same side of the head that they use their cell phone. There's
really?
Two other types of tumors that are on the increase as well. One is called acoustic neuroma, which affects the cell going to your ear. That's an auditory nerve cell. And uveal melanoma, which is an eye cancer. And all of those happen on the same side of the head that you use your cell phone. So there's real concern that we should really minimize our use of this technology, especially for young people.
What did you say? Did you say that was your cancer?
One is the uveal melanoma is an eye cancer.
Oh, eye cancer. Okay. Right. Okay.
Yeah, cancer in the eye. And, you know, when you listen to the press, it sounds as though scientists are really uncertain and divided about this, but half the studies are showing that there's no increased risk. The other half are showing that there's an increased risk. Well, if you look at who funds the studies, if they're being funded by either the military or by the cell phone industry, then you can bet your bottom dollar that most of those studies don't find an effect. Indeed, Dr. Henry Lai at the University of Washington did just that. He looked at studies, found out who funded them, found that if it was funded by either the military or the wireless industry, that the studies, 75% of them showed no effect. And if they were independently funded, 75% of them showed that there was an increased risk of cancer. So we've got a lot of poor science being done right now.
What about, you talked about, I saw that paper you wrote to the World Health Organization, about, maybe I'm confused, but about the wireless phones, the portable phones in our house?
Oh, that's right. There's a phone called a DECT phone, D-E-C-T, and some of the phones, some of the cordless phones that we have in our homes actually have DECT on it. Many of them don't. And these phones emit 24/7. They're always emitting radio frequencies. Your exposure to a DECT phone, the radio frequency coming from that is likely to be higher than your exposure to an antenna outside of your home. That's how high they are. And most people don't realize they have a DECT phone, and so they go to sleep at night. The phone's right beside their bed, and mm-hmm. they're being exposed during the night. And
you know, I wonder our sleep habits are off. Everybody has one of those. Is it the ones that go for a long way, like those 3.5 megahertz or whatever they are?
They go for a long way. The most recent one is a 6 megahertz, a 6 gigahertz phone.
Gigahertz, that's right.
Yeah, that's the most recent one. And you can use them, you know, 100 meters from your home, for example, and you can still talk on it. And the problem is, because they do have this long range, they're very powerful. And mm-hmm. so you might not have one in your home, but your neighbors might have one. And if you live in an apartment, then you're likely to be exposed to their phone.
Wow. All right, we've got about 12 minutes. Is there anything you want to talk about that I haven't asked you about? And if not, I'll just ask you questions, but I'll give you this time.
Okay, well, there is one thing. In the United States and in Canada and several other countries around the world, we're asking to cut back on carbon emissions and to conserve energy. And one of the ways that we're asked to conserve energy is to use these energy-efficient light bulbs, these compact fluorescent, you know, squirrely light bulbs. And when I talk to people who are electrically sensitive, they've told me that they react very badly to these light bulbs. So we began to measure some of them to find out what they're emitting. And they're emitting dirty electricity. They're emitting radio frequencies. Some of them also produce ultraviolet radiation. And there are people around the world who have put them in their homes, and they're getting really, really sick. They have skin problems. They have difficulty sleeping. They have headaches. And there are three groups in the United Kingdom that have come out against these light bulbs because their members are becoming sick. One is the British Dermatological Association, another is Epilepsy Action, and the third is Migraine Action. And they're asking their governments to allow them to continue using incandescent light bulbs after the ban. Now, I think in the United States, your ban is, I think, around 2012. And so after that period, you won't be able to use the regular incandescent light bulbs. You'll be forced.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so everyone's going to be forced to use these light bulbs, and unfortunately, those people who get sick from them are going to become really quite ill because they'll be absolutely everywhere, in schools, restaurants, everywhere.
So what do we do?
Well, there's a technology out there that uses LED lights, light-emitting diodes, and I'm hoping that they'll be available, economically available, by that period. They're actually much more energy efficient, and so it's a much better alternative than the compact fluorescents. But until then, if they're not available yet, I really hope the governments will lift the ban and allow us to continue using the incandescent light bulbs until a substitute that doesn't harm human health becomes available.
So who do we contact?
Pardon?
Who would we contact? Our senators and congressmen?
Exactly, yeah. I think letting them know would be a really, really useful thing.
All right. Anything else that you want to talk about?
No, that's about it.
Okay.
That, when it comes to electrical sensitivity, one of the things that most people don't realize is that there's a very large number of people who are becoming sick. We think that anywhere from 3 to 10% of the population has severe symptoms. You know, these people can't go to a lot of places. Very often they become refugees in their own home. And about 35% have moderate symptoms, and usually they react to these energy-efficient light bulbs. They get a headache when they use a cell phone, and these are the beginnings of the symptoms of electrical sensitivity.
What kind of headaches are they? Are they tension? Do they have something to do with what? Because I have really bad headaches. Is it blood vessel dilation? What's happening if you're sensitive?
We don't know what's happening inside the brain, but one of the things we do know is that initially the headache, if you're using a cell phone or a cordless phone, initially nothing happens, and then you begin to have tingling in your fingers. You might feel a warmth against your face. You might have redness on the side of your face, flushing. Then you begin to develop headaches that go away very quickly or fairly mild, and then the headaches last longer, and even after you hang up the phone, you still have a headache. and the headaches become progressively more severe as well, to the point where some people can't be in the same room with someone else using a cell phone.
Really?
How bad it becomes.
Now, on one of your websites, let me look at it, which one it is. I think it's the one to the World Health Organization, but you give 7 groups of symptom groups. Group 1, no symptoms. Group 2, sleep disturbance, tiredness, depression. You know which one I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Oh. Then it's got headaches, restlessness, day-to-day, irritability, forgetfulness, learning difficulties. And group 4 is infection, sinusitis, lymph node swelling, joint and limb pain, mm-hmm. nerve and soft tissues, tumbling, numbness, tingling. And group 5, tinnitus, hearing loss, sudden hearing loss. Then group 6, heart-related things, and group 7, hormonal and weight issues.
Yeah.
So what are the differences between those, and what information do you have? Why would somebody be one over the other?
We don't know.
Just what information do you have?
We don't know. We don't know why some people are sensitive and others aren't. We do know that people who are chemically sensitive are likely to be electromagnetically sensitive as well. Anyone who has a poor immune system is likely to be sensitive to this form of energy. And basically what we tell people who have developed electrical sensitivity is you need to do 3 things to improve your health. The first thing is you have to avoid exposure as much as possible, or reduce exposure as much as possible. The second thing you have to do is build up your immune system with proper nutrition, proper supplements that are based on what your own body needs. So you have to go to a really good nutritionist who can help you by telling you, you know, what you're deficient in. And the third thing you have to do is you have to detoxify your body. And part of that detoxification should be getting rid of mercury amalgam. We find that there's a real relationship between people who are electrically sensitive and the amount of mercury they have in their body, either from eating fish or other contaminants, contaminated foods with mercury, or having the amalgam in their teeth.
Mm-hmm. Do you think those foot baths work?
I have seen people who have benefited greatly by the foot baths, but I've never tested them myself. It's just based on anecdotal information.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. All right. Take a few minutes and tell them where to find you, your contact information. Do you have a book? Are you writing a book?
Well, actually, we just finished writing a book. Camilla Reese and I are the authors of an e-book, and it's called Public Health SOS. The Shadow Side of the Wireless Revolution. And in that book, we have quotes from scientists and medical doctors and lawyers, and we answer 110 questions that were posed to us at a Commonwealth Conference forum that we were at just last year. And if people are interested in buying the ebook, it's less than $10, so it's very inexpensive. There's a website that they can go to, and that's www.electromagnetichealth.org, and they can get a lot of very useful information on that site. In addition to the book, there's some videos and taped recordings with interviews with people as well.
I would imagine that it's going to open up a whole new door to a whole new different kind of litigation down the road.
Oh, it is. This is going to be much worse than tobacco ever was, because we've got, I think, over 3 billion people on the planet using cell phones right now. So
who's going to be responsible, I wonder?
Well,
employers, for letting their employee, for not making their work environment healthy, or the providers? Who?
Well, I think the first responsibility goes with the federal government that sets the guidelines. Most of the providers are within the guidelines. And until we have guidelines that truly protect public health, it's very difficult to hold them responsible. So I think the Federal Communication Commission in the United States, Industry Canada in Canada, and some of the international bodies, ICNIRP and the World Health Organization, have to set guidelines that truly protect public health. And
how's it any different from, say, asbestos? Because the guidelines were set for them to use that. But we took down my stove this weekend, and it had asbestos wiring in it.
Yes.
You know, but They knew that it was doing harm to people. The people who made it did.
That's right. But we've reduced the amount of asbestos that's allowed in the country. For example, in the United States, there's a partial asbestos ban. They haven't gotten rid of it in appliances that are older and in buildings that are older, although they've removed it from a lot of schools.
I guess I don't see, the federal government said asbestos was okay, but the people who made it knew that it was hurting people. So at some point, that person is going to have to be responsible for
that. That's right.
Because they're hiding the information.
That's right. Well, that's exactly what happened with the asbestos industry. They had confidential letters between themselves stating that they knew that this was hazardous, and how do we keep the information quiet, and how do we cast doubt on all of this? How do we get rid of the people who are actually doing the research? How do we discredit them? And I expect the same thing is happening and will happen in this industry as well.
So one other thing I just thought about, what range of, is it above 50 kilohertz that's dangerous? What is the range? The reason I'm asking is I was talking to Norm Shealy the other day, and he said that he had this machine that was curing depression,
mm-hmm.
and it oscillates at, 50 cycles a second. So is that the same thing, or is that different?
55 cycles a second? Is that what you just said?
50 cycles a second.
Okay, that's what the electricity is at. That's called 50 hertz. That's what the electricity is at in most of the world. In North America, we use 60 cycles per second, or 60 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are frequencies that are beneficial, and there are frequencies that are harmful. And the problem is that, so I think we can actually cure a lot of illnesses using electromagnetic energy once we recognize what the frequency is that is healthy, and the intensity and the duration of exposure, that kind of thing. The problem is we're just producing so much radiation on our planet. At all different frequencies, and we've never done the studies to find out how safe it is.
All right. When someone talks about pulsed electromagnetic fields on, let's say, Rice frequency machines, how is that different?
Well, a pulsed field is simply a field that goes, on, off, on, off,
uh-huh.
on, and it pulses a certain number of times a second. So it's very similar to an alternating current, for example. And that's why I say that some of these pulsed frequencies can actually be beneficial. They can cure things. They can kill bacteria. They can do all sorts of things that would ultimately benefit the host, for example.
Do you have any idea the range where you think the healthy ones fall?
I don't think it's a range. I think there's specific frequencies that are
mm-hmm.
healthy. For example, 16 cycles per second causes all sorts of problems to calcium movement between cells. That's also a cycle that we have as part of our brainwave activity, and
mm-hmm.
so it can be entrenched. And so I don't think it's above or below a certain level that's safe.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a specific frequency at a specific time for a specific intensity.
Yeah, me too. So one more question, because we got about 3 minutes. These pulsed electromagnetic frequency machines that people have that run a whole gambit of these healing machines,
mm-hmm.
that run a whole gambit, up and down, to a high number, back to a low number. I don't understand how that can affect or heal a single cell. How does it lock on to heal it?
Does
that make sense?
Yeah, I do. I don't know. I do believe that we can have machines that can diagnose your body using electromagnetic energy. I mean, we have those already. I
mm-hmm.
do know that you can heal people with these energies when they're set at specific frequencies. I think once they start giving you a whole gamut of frequencies, that's when I don't understand how.
I don't understand that either.
Yeah, I don't either.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We're out of time now, but thank you so much. I'm going to have you back because you have so much information to talk about. I can't stay focused on those.
Thank you so much, Eva. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you, and good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
health. You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Harris.